Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Good morning, New Orleans. It's a good Friday. The Saints won their first preseason game. They've actually had a rough road over the past several seasons in preseason, so it was nice to get a win, although the coach didn't seem too terribly happy about it. A win is a win, and I think it creates some momentum, and we're excited about that. We're also excited about the first night of the play-by-play by Zach Strief. Just want to give him a shout out. Great job. Congratulations. Hundreds more to go. One down. Plenty more, and we'll be there each and every time for you. We got a great show today. In the last hour, we're going to be talking to Mike Dettillier, WWL's NFL analyst, recapping the Saints games, what we can anticipate going into next week, who were the dark horses out there, what did they do to help themselves, and we'll talk about that. In the second hour, no filter Friday. We want you to pop off about what you find absolutely incredible. I'll give it a shout first, and then we'll go from there. In this hour, this week in New Orleans, we've had the American Legislative Exchange Council has been in town, their convention, over 1,000 attendees. We talked to some of the representatives of that organization earlier this week, and we have the benefit of having Jonathan Williams, the chief economist for ALEC, as well as Philip Gunn, a member of ALEC, who is the Speaker of the House, a Republican from our neighboring sister state, Mississippi. Welcome to the show, gentlemen.
Well, thank you. Good morning, Noel. Glad to be here.
So, first, Jonathan, you issue a report called Rich States, Poor States, and it's the 11th edition that you do for ALEC, and kind of looks like looking at a number of economic indicators and a kind of a guide or kind of a tally sheet of where states are at the present time from an economic standpoint. Tell us about it.
Well, absolutely. It's been a phenomenal piece of work to work on with former Reagan advisor Dr. Arthur Laffer and Stephen Moore on TV, CNN, and from the Wall Street Journal to really give state lawmakers and the public at large an idea for how competitive their state is for economic growth and job growth going forward. And there's so many different ways to look at it. We choose to look at it through things that our state legislators in Baton Rouge and capitals all across the country can control, things like taxes and regulation, labor policy. And we choose those things for a few reasons. Is that, first of all, they're things that legislators can control versus so many other factors that matter for economic growth that legislators can't control. And, you know, they also are things that Art Laffer studied this for 50 years. We know they matter for economic growth. We know they matter for wage growth and job growth. So it's all about how to create a more prosperous state that lifts individuals into more economic opportunity.
And what I liked about it, it's kind of a quick guide to see where you stand relative to other states and other areas of the country, albeit where Philip and I may be more interested in the Deep South and what's going on there. But, you know, I think there's other parts of the country, right, Philip?
Absolutely. Exactly right.
So tell us, what are the indicators that you see that really make the difference? I mean, y'all look at a bunch, but what are the one or two that you think are really the ones that you should be focusing on?
Well, I think, you know, focusing on a couple is exactly the right approach. And, you know, looking at things like income taxes, there's so many states, including competitor states to yours, such as Texas, which has been really the economic engine of this country during some tough periods for us with the national economy, and Tennessee, another state that's booming. I know that Speaker Gunn's working on plans to get their income tax down or maybe even eliminate it in Mississippi. Florida, of course, is another one of those examples. So looking at personal and business income taxes, and what really that is price tag a state puts on making income or creating jobs in their state. versus the others. And let's face it, businesses go, capital flows for where it is welcomed. And that's a direct price on doing work or creating a job in Louisiana, let's say, with higher taxes than some of its neighbors. Another big factor is it's not rocket surgery, as Art Laffer likes to joke. It is basically the issue of spending equals taxation at the state level. We all have balanced budget requirements versus those guys in Washington that don't pass budgets and don't certainly balance budgets, but at the end of the day, taxation is spending. And so keeping a lid on the growth of spending, living within means at the state government level is so important, just like families and businesses do every day. And then, of course, things like right-to-work laws, which Louisiana and Mississippi have had on the books for ages. Certain states are now just catching up to where you all have been for decades, and that's really an important piece for economic development and give workers a choice whether they want to join a union or not.
Jonathan, one of the things that that kind of stuck out at looking through the report, we often hear politicians, and I used to be one. I was a former sheriff who was worked in the public sector for 40 years, about the number of public employees. And what I found is that there, most states are right there within, you know, dozens of one another per 10,000 population as it relates to the number of public employees they have.
It is close. Louisiana is a bit of an outlier with a relatively high number of public employees per percentage of the population. You know, certain states organize themselves different ways, with some rely much more heavily on local levels and multiple local levels of government. Sometimes that cascades through. And when we look at it, it's state and local employees that we're looking at. And so that is a bit of a proxy variable, as we like to say in our report, for the size and scope of government. And that generally, if a state has a large public workforce, that certainly at least indicates that it's spending more than maybe some of its neighbors. But you're right. All states have core government services, so they need at least a very good range of public employees. That doesn't differ, because if they focus on core services, it should be relatively similar across states. That's a good point.
Yeah, I mean, it just always seems to be one of those political issues that folks throw out there. And as I looked across this report, Texas, for example, is at 533 per 10,000, and Louisiana is at 521. So they rank, Louisiana ranks, no, I'm sorry, I'm looking at the wrong one, 551. They rank 35th, and Texas ranks 29th, and they're fairly close.
So yeah, that's right.
So anyway, Phil, let me ask you. I mean, you get this report, obviously. You're the Speaker of the House in Mississippi. What does this report actually reveal to you, and what do you draw from it as a legislator?
Well, it's certainly valuable information, because you can see what other states are doing that is working and what they're doing that's not working. You can draw models from that and try to pattern your state after those models that are working. You also have to take into account the uniqueness of your individual state. Mississippi is not like Texas. We're not like New York. We're not like California. Things that may work in those states may not work in Mississippi. But we can look at a place like Indiana or Iowa, for example, places that are more similar to our state, and use that information and say, okay, what's working there, what's not working there, let's see if we can copy that. ALEC has been a great source of information for us over the past few years. We are a lot like Louisiana. In fact, I'm very amazed at how similar the legislative body in Mississippi is to the legislative body in Louisiana. I've been very fortunate to get to know your two most recent speakers very well. Chuck Pleckley was your speaker until about 2 years ago, and Taylor Barre is your new speaker. I've established a close relationship with both of those men. We've been able to compare notes, talk about similarities between our two legislative bodies, and I am very surprised at how our two states are very closely aligned when it comes to the issues and the things that we deal with. What we're trying to do in Mississippi is to make our tax structure very fair, and one that is efficient and will produce the most revenue for us in the most cost-effective way. We are trying to eliminate our income tax. We had a three-prong bracket that we started with about 7 years ago. By the way, Mississippi, for the first time in 136 years, was able to get a Republican House 7 years ago in 2011 election, which I know Louisiana was very similar
in as far as its time frame in that same regard. But we began to try to eliminate our income tax bracket and move towards what we call user taxes or consumption taxes, which, according to all the economists I talk to, like Jonathan, is a more preferable way to base your tax structure. So we're in the midst of, we've already eliminated the first prong. We're in the process of trying to eliminate the second prong, and eventually, hopefully, we'll be able to eliminate that income tax bracket, because it's a tax on productivity, and you'd rather tax consumption than that productivity. So that's just one example of the kind of information we can get from an organization like ALEC that we can take and use and make sound public policy and try to position ourselves to be a very business-friendly state.
We got to get to a break, guys, but Philip, I hope y'all can stay with me, because I'd like to ask you about a very interesting proposal that you brought forth earlier this year, the infrastructure tax swap.
Okay.
And let's talk about that, because infrastructure issues across America are very difficult for states to deal with on their own. We'll be right back. We have Jonathan Williams and Phil Gunn from ALEC, American Legislative Exchange Council. Stay with us. This is Newell on WWL. We're back, and we're talking to Jonathan Williams, Chief Economist for the American Legislative Exchange Council, and also Philip Gunn, who is the Mississippi Speaker of the House, who's a member of that organization as well. And they've issued the 11th edition of Rich States, Poor States. And as it relates to state economic outlook rankings in 2018, based on 15 policy variables, Mississippi ranks 24 out of the 50 states, and Louisiana 27. So we were talking, Mr. Gunn, I wanted to ask you, we may have lost him. Jonathan, you there still?
I'm here, sir.
Okay, I think we lost Speaker Gunn, and we'll try and get him back. So when we think about one of the categories that you look at is absolute domestic migration as one of the policy variables. Explain that to us.
So domestic migration is a fancy way of kind of dicing into the population numbers. So every year, the U.S. Census Bureau and IRS track the movement of individuals from state to state. And of course, that builds into every 10 years, paying attention as the census comes out, and of course, redrawing all the lines when it comes to the congressional seats across America based on state population. And so net domestic migration, what it does is it takes total population and takes out any international immigration and takes out birth rates and death rates and focuses just on Americans that are here in the United States, what they're deciding to do when they move from state to state. And it really tells an incredible story, which is Americans are continuing to vote with their feet from generally high tax states to low tax states and states that value more economic competitiveness and a pro-business, pro-jobs environment. So it's a really telling story. We call it in economics revealed preferences, which is when people take those actions, they're following their best economic opportunity at heart, and it turns out that the places that are booming and growing and gaining population are states that generally follow a freedom philosophy.
Yeah, I was moved by that variable because there seems to be a strong nexus between that and your rankings amongst the other 50 states.
There is. I think it draws directly to that point that people go from state to state for many reasons, family, weather, lots of different things. But the number one reason why people will move from state to state is for a job, is for better economic opportunity. And so how it ties into our rankings is we look at taxes, regulation, labor policy, things that all affect how competitive those states are for job creation and creating new economic opportunities. So it's kind of an indirect effect, but taxes and all those things affect the ability to retain and attract talent, and people chase, of course, their own best interests in economic opportunity.
Yeah, you know, it's one of the first reports that I've looked at. I'm going to be honest with you that I like pictures, and you got the graphs, the bar graphs and everything else, and it makes it easy to make the connection between these policy variables, and you see it graphically right away. It just jumps right off the page at you.
Well, you know, the last 50 pages of the book are one page for every state, so every state lawmaker or interested individual can go in and slice and dice the data for themselves to see why is it that Louisiana ranks 27th.
Right.
And see what we can do to improve. And also, we have our companion website, richstatespoorstates.com. org, and that website allows you to go through not just this edition of the book, but all 11 editions of the book to see how the rankings have changed over these 11 years, which is a really fun new tool that we just developed.
And I think we have Speaker Gunn back, and I think, you know, this report reveals the strong similarities between Louisiana and Mississippi. And Speaker, I wanted to ask you about this infrastructure tax swap notion, that your idea that you're putting forward as a policy initiative in Mississippi. Tell us about that.
Well, it kind of touches on what we talked about a few minutes ago. Over the years, I've listened to a number of economists, and they all talk about the fact that you would prefer your tax structure to be based upon user fees, user taxes. For those people who use the product, they pay for the product. If you don't want to have to pay for the product, don't use the product, whatever it may be. When it comes to roads and bridges, clearly the fair thing to do, the best thing to do, is for those people who use the roads to pay for the roads. And the way that has unfolded over the years is through the gasoline or the fuel tax. Those people who buy fuel for their vehicles pay a little bit extra in tax to subsidize the roads, build the roads, and that sort of thing. Well, we've had a great push in Mississippi to do something about our roads. I know Louisiana and Mississippi both struggle with maintaining quality roads.
I think y'all have us beat, though. I'll be quite honest with you.
It depends on where you go, I think. But we've been looking for a way to create a more dedicated stream of revenue to our road and bridge issue. And as I talked to economists like Jonathan, and they began to say, you want to move towards user taxes and get away from income taxes, I looked at our state tax structure, which, as I said earlier, involves or currently implements a state income tax. It would be great if we could get away from that state income tax and go more toward the user fee idea. So the swap idea that I am exploring right now, and Jonathan's helping me with it, is to phase out our income tax over a four-year period of time.
Mr. Speaker, I got to get to a hard break. Can y'all stay with us through the break?
Yeah.
All right. We'll continue this conversation when we return. This is Newell on WWL. We're back, and we have Jonathan Williams, Chief Economist for the American Legislative Exchange Council, as well as Philip Gunn. He is the Mississippi Speaker of the House and a member of that organization as well. Mr. Speaker, you were giving us the final details of your infrastructure tax swap.
Yes, sir. All I was suggesting was that we work to eliminate our income tax, phase it out over a four-year period of time, and at the same time, we would increase our fuel tax in an equal amount over the same four-year period of time. And after 4 years, what you've done is basically shift that stream of revenue from an income tax-based stream of revenue to a user tax, a fuel tax stream of revenue, and then we would dedicate that money to our road and bridges, and that would generate about $150 million over a four-year period of time. It would go directly towards the roads, and I talked to Jonathan about that. He gave me some good suggestions for improving that idea, and we're continuing to work through that, but the end result would be that we have given our income taxpayers a break, and we have given some money, some revenue dedicated to roads and bridges, and at the same time improved our tax structure. Jonathan suggests we make it revenue negative, which I think is a good idea. So given the numbers, I'm probably going to massage it so that over the course of time we actually give the taxpayers a break. We will, in other words, not increase the gas tax to the same extent that we decrease the revenue,
right,
the income tax. And so the taxpayers would experience a small, probably a $20 million tax break.
Tax break. Right.
And we get money for our roads. So it's just an idea we're exploring, and Jonathan's helping me with it.
Well, to both of you, there's a move afoot about evaluating real income vis-a-vis consumption as opposed to other methods. Your thoughts?
I'll respond to that.
Yeah, I guess, looking at maybe clarifying the question might be a little bit helpful to see what direction you want to go with that.
Well, I've just been reading more and more articles about, you know, folks saying that in order to get our hands around real income as we report it, it would be much more favorable to look at it from the perspective of consumption, of what we're actually consuming, to determine, you know, what the income actually is.
Oh, sure. So, I mean, basically, that's like a consumed income tax idea, which is taking, let's say, the savings and investment portion, and that is, you know, using that as not being taxed under, you know, good principles of tax policy. And as economists, you never want to tax savings and investment. Those are things that you've already paid taxes when you made the money. And kind of taking that approach to a consumed income tax, which is, you know, just taxing then what you ended up spending, which is equal to what you were not saving and investing. So that's an easy way of kind of getting to more of a consumption tax base for, let's say, states that couldn't eliminate their income tax altogether. If you're able to take away the tax on savings and investment, it becomes a consumed income tax, and it's a much less damaging form of income tax than, let's say, the kind of income tax that California and New York and some of those states have really been hit by and has really destroyed their economies.
Jonathan, also, and to the speaker as well, you see a lot of regions that have strong similarities like Louisiana and Mississippi. Do you see states being more proactive of working together to try and tackle some of their problems collectively to become more competitive against some of their some of the states in other competitive regions? For example, Louisiana and Mississippi are agricultural states. They're timber states. I mean, there's so many things that we just kind of look a lot alike.
That's correct, and I would say the answer is yes and no. The meeting like we just are having this week in New Orleans with ALEC brings together legislators from all across the country. And we do have task force meetings where we sit and we talk about issues and we share ideas, things that have worked, things that have not worked. And we can take from these meetings ideas and model policies that ALEC does a great job of drafting and take those back to our states and implement good conservative legislation based upon sound, objective data. That's one of the great values of the Rich States, Poor States publication, is it is based on objective data. Can't argue with that. We take those things and we share ideas and we do help one another try to move in a direction that we all think is most prosperous for our country. At the same time, on the flip side of that, we do compete. And
right.
Louisiana and Mississippi are competing for business. We try to distinguish ourselves through the use of natural resources, through tax incentives, through tort reform. We each try to posture our states in the most favorable light possible to say, hey, we're the best state for you to come do business. Just come over here and let us work with you. So the answer, I guess, would be yes and no. We do share ideas and try to help one another. But at the same time, we do compete and try to distinguish ourselves when it comes to attracting business and creating jobs.
But I think we
all have to remember, all of America benefits when the people are working.
Sometimes your fiercest competitor can be your best ally, right, Jonathan?
That is correct. That's exactly
right. Well, absolutely, and especially when the states can band together, let's say, to work to fight against bad federal policies. That's one of the great things is when we bring legislators together in an ALEC meeting, like Speaker Gunn said, there's so much synergy here where, let's say, legislators from the Southeast or my home region of the Midwest have a lot of commonalities, whether it's oil and gas in some states, whether it's agriculture, whether it's manufacturing, and then looking at the policies at the federal level and band together, even though they may be competitors and trying to attract businesses and new jobs state to state, they can say, you know, some of these damaging policies were coming out of President Obama administration through the EPA or the Interior Department that stopped oil and gas permitting and things like that. It's great to see states be able to band together based on issue and sometimes based on region as well.
Well, gentlemen, we hope that you guys had a successful convention and hope you enjoyed your time in New Orleans, and we'd love to host y'all every year. So,
well, New Orleans has been a great venue. Everybody has had a great time, and the people of New Orleans have been very generous and hospitable, and we love coming down there. Thank you for letting us be on your show today.
All righty. Thank you all so much. Y'all have a great weekend. Truly appreciate your time and your insight. Good luck to all of y'all, and good luck to ALEC as well. Thanks again.
Right. Thanks so much.
All righty. We'll be right back. Give us a call, 260-1870. What's on your mind about what we just talked about? Let us know. We'll be right back. We're back, and we've been talking to members of ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council. They've been in town through today, actually, this week, meeting at their annual convention. We'll go to the talk lines. Line one, talk to Chuck in Metairie. What say you, Chuck?
Hey, Newell, I was just curious when they were talking about the tax on the gas. You know, at what point would the tax be levied? Would it be at the retail level? Would it be at the wholesale level? Would it be a tax on the gas seller on their sales of gas? Or
now the gas tax would be a consumption tax that would be at the point of sale.
So you're saying at the gas pump itself?
Yes.
So like
that
the
users would be paying to finance the roads.
So let's say, for example, a big company with a fleet, would they be taxed on it, or just
yes.
or, you know, or
at the,
so
yeah, at the pump, yeah.
Okay, yeah, because there's, you know, there's
and
so
then
many different
and then whatever
the gas.
Right, and then whatever they generate, there would be a cut on his plan, on Speaker Gunn's plan on infrastructure tax swap. They would reduce the amount of income taxes by the same commensurate amount of money that they raised on the gas tax side.
Yeah, I guess it sounds pretty good.
Yeah, so they're thinking of moving to more of this consumption model as opposed to the income model.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of other states do it too.
Yeah, you know, I brought them on. You know, I get a lot of texts. Oh, ALEC, they're this, they're that. You know, every group has detractors, right? But they were here. They were in town. They spent their money here. And I thought it was an opportunity to have them weigh in. This was the second group that we've had on from ALEC over the week. This report, and I forgot to ask how you can get it, and I'll figure that out here in a second, and I'll let you know. It's really worthwhile looking at, quite frankly. It kind of gives you a snapshot of all of the states and what they do, how they do it, what their effective rates are on taxes, income taxes, corporate income tax, property tax burden, sales tax burden per $100,000 of personal income. So I think it's a well-done report to kind of see where you stack up to other states.
And that's what, ALIC?
ALEC, American A-L-E-C. Legislative Exchange Council.
I'll have to check that out.
All righty, Chuck, thanks
Thank
so much for calling in. Let's talk to Bill in Metairie. What say you, Bill?
Hey, I'm okay. I guess, first of all, what I'd like to say is that if I was in politics, this probably would sound really great because the people pay their salaries. But the reality of it is, if we have somebody that makes $50,000 a year and another guy that makes $500,000 a year, and both of them spend, say, $5,000 a year on groceries, the guy that makes $500,000, really, he's not going to care if milk goes up to $8 a gallon. But I can guarantee you, the guy that's making $50,000, $8 a gallon is a lot of money, and he's probably going to have to do without. Now, with that said, we're sort of turning the clock back, and that's what this whole movement is to turn the clock back to where the masses pay more of the taxes and the people at the 1%ers or 5%ers, and I used to be one, and at that time, I didn't really look at it. I looked at how much I was paying in taxes, and it just, you know, got under my skin. But now I'm sort of broke. I can see the other side of the other side of the equation. So my biggest problem is that it's not really it's a great tax because the wealthy is not having to pay a whole lot more, and the poor are paying their fair share. But their fair share is a bigger chunk out of their salary than it is out of a guy that's making 500 grand a year.
Well, but there are those that say too, Bill, and consider the following, that a lot of the folks in that top 1% really don't pay an effective yield on the income tax because they also are the ones that get the beneficiaries, are the beneficiary of all the tax write-offs.
Well,
so when you move,
I,
so
when
you move to the,
con-
the
I'm you, sorry, go ahead.
When you move to the consumption model, there are no exceptions. It's a point of sale tax, and what
right.
you consume, you're going to pay on. But
right.
agree, there's no tax policy that's going to be implemented where they're not going to be winners and losers. They're always
right.
going to be that. It's never going to be complete equity amongst all of the socioeconomic strata, ever. It's impossible almost.
I'm agreeing with you on that 100%. Obviously, the people that are making $50,000 or $100,000 less a year less, they're going to pay a bigger part of their income towards food, gas, and so on and so forth. And all I'm saying is that that is not going to be a way. What they're trying to do, Mississippi's going to try to do, is they're going to try to get their state back on top on the backs of people that make under $100,000 a year. And the people that are making, like the casinos, they ought to have a 65% tax on the casinos.
They're given a commensurate credit on your income tax. So you're not going to be paying income tax. So whatever is generated by the gas tax, that commensurate amount of money would be a percentage decrease in income taxes.
So somebody that's making, say, $35,000 has two kids and no wife. Their wife left or whatever the case would be, and they have two kids and themselves.
Well, I don't have all – the devil's in the details.
They're not going to get anything anyway.
I get it. The devil's in the details.
I'm going to give you a $50,000 credit on income tax, but I don't pay anyway because, I don't make enough money. So.
Well, we're not sure how all of that's going to work out exactly, but we're just talking about it at the 100,000-foot right. level. Bill, got to get to a break. Uh-huh. Thanks so much for calling. Appreciate your time. Have a great day. We're back, and we've been talking to folks from the American Legislative Exchange Council. Jonathan Williams was the chief economist there, as well as the Speaker of the House of the Mississippi House of Representatives, Philip Gunn. And we're talking about rich states, poor states. And the economic outlook rankings for 2018 have Mississippi at 24 of the 50 states and Louisiana at 27. And then they have another grouping, which they call the State Economic Performance Rankings for the last 10 years of 06 to 2016 as the most current economic data that they have, and that takes into consideration state gross domestic product, absolute domestic migration, and non-farm payroll. And what that reveals is that Louisiana is in 31st place, and Mississippi was in 44th place, Alabama in 36th, and of the other southern states, Georgia was at 14, and Florida was at 17. So kind of middle of the pack for Louisiana. One of the things, though, that the economist Jonathan Williams was talking about that reveals itself right away in this report, and that's why I asked him about it, about absolute domestic migration. Where are people, are they coming in your state in migration, or do you have more out migration? The last time that we had a tiny, itty-bitty bit of in-migration in Louisiana was in 2011. And in every year since, our out-migration has grown. And as more and more people are leaving Louisiana. The states that seem to be performing greater economically are, and you look at their absolute domestic migration numbers, where their taxes are stable, they're not changing a lot. That's the states that folks are moving to. And in fact, when you look at Mississippi, the last time that they've had an in-migration plus was in 08. And you look at another state on the eastern seaboard, Massachusetts, for example, their tax burden there in comparison to ours is incredible. The last time they've had a in-migration for 1 year in 09, and they've had out-migration in every other year since 07. Very interesting data. Very well done. Enjoyed reading it. It's now time for the cash contest, and hopefully you can get some cash in-migration for $1,000. In the Entercom National Cash Contest, the code word this hour is SIGNAL. Text SIGNAL. SIGNAL to 72881. That's 72881. Text now and you could win $1,000 cash. Listen for the next code word just before the top of the hour, every hour through 6 p.m. $1,000 up for grab. Stay with us.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.